Since learning the truth about alcohol over 4 years ago, I've become pretty skeptical about anything that seems too good to be true. You know, like alcohol. If you're like me and you can spot a too good to be true health hack from a mile away, congrats, you're a skeptic too. Ritual knows that every good skeptic deserves a multivitamin that exceeds our standards. I take Ritual's Essential for Women 18 Plus every morning because it has high quality and traceable key ingredients in clean, bioavailable forms. It's gentle on an empty stomach and has a minty essence in every bottle that helps make taking my multis actually enjoyable. No more shady business. Ritual's Essential for Women 18 Plus is a multivitamin you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month at ritual.com/sobermom. Start Ritual or add Essential for Women 18 Plus to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/sobermom for 25% off.
All right, you guys, I am currently struggling with a pinched nerve in my neck, and if you have ever had one, you know the pain. So I am feeling super thankful for today's sponsor, Tenassi. Tenassi's CBD CBDA is two times better than CBD alone and better than over-the-counter ibuprofen, acetaminophen, and aspirin. It helps soothe and relieve my aches and pains, like my pinched nerve, and it's great for sleep and anxiety, so I put it on right before bed. Tenassi was discovered by a team of chemists and biologists at Middle Tennessee State University, and 5% of all revenue is given back to the university partner for ongoing research. It is THC-free and comes in a range of products. I love the topicals, but you can also choose from soft gels, gummies, and tinctures. Satisfaction is guaranteed. Try Tenassi for 30 days, and if you don't love it, you get a full refund. Go to Tenassi.com and use code MOM to get 25% off at checkout. That's TANASI.com to get 25% off your first order with promo code MOM.
Hi, welcome to the Sober Mom Life podcast. I'm your host, Suzanne, of My Kind of Sweet and the Sober Mom Life on Instagram. If you are a mama who has questioned your relationship with alcohol at times, if you're wondering if maybe it's making motherhood harder, this is for you. I will be having candid, honest, funny conversations with other moms who have also thought, maybe motherhood is better without alcohol. Is it possible? We'll chat and we'll talk about all things sobriety and how we've found freedom in sobriety. I don't consider myself an alcoholic. You don't have to either. And maybe life is brighter without alcohol. I hope you will join us on this journey, and I'm so excited to get started. Hello, happy Friday. We are taking just a quick break from the Real Sober Mom chats. I wanted to share. So my friend Lane, we actually live in the same town. We are social friends, and I'm just so excited because she started a podcast with her twin sister, Nell, who lives in Puerto Rico. So it's such a cool concept that they're identical twins, and they really are identical, you guys, living 2,000 miles apart. They started a podcast called Double Trouble, and they talk about just hard conversations. They're bringing a lot of, things that we don't normally talk about and what we have to navigate as women, as moms. They're bringing those to the forefront. And I'm really excited that they asked me to come on the podcast. And I loved it so much that I thought I would share it over here too. So today is a special episode. This is me on Double Trouble. And then if you're new here, you get to hear a little bit of my story and just how I think about sobriety too. I think it's a good overview. And you will also love Nell and Lane, and you definitely have to check out their podcast and listen to all of their other episodes because they're just so funny and relatable and insightful. And I love when women talk about what's real and when we just don't pretend everything is okay all the time and perfect, and that perfect is the goal. And so they are talking about all of it, and I love it so much. You will love them too. Also, I talk a lot about the cafe in this episode, and I'm very excited. Launching on Sunday, we have a new Sober Mom Life membership. I cannot wait for you to experience it. We're going to have two levels. We will have the community, the Sober Mom Life community at $5.95 a month. That is where you get to connect and chat. It's kind of like Facebook, but better. And then we'll have the cafe. And the cafe, as always, is the highest level of sobriety support. We have our weekly Zoom meeting 6 days a week. We have book club. We also have the feed like Facebook and the chat. So the Discord goes away, and this is going to be just a much better platform for us as we grow, because we are growing. And I'm just continually blown away by just how amazing you guys are, and that you're supportive of this space and that you're finding community over there. And I'm just so excited. So stay tuned for that. I will share the link on Monday so you can come and join the new space. And if you are just a new member of the cafe and you're like, wait a second, I just joined, what does that mean? Don't worry, because we will be telling you all about it through email. So you will be getting an email from me and with a specific link. So fear not, we will make it through this transition. But I cannot wait to share the new space with you and meet you over there. And I'm excited for you to hear this episode. Enjoy this episode of me on the Double Trouble podcast with Nell and Lane.
Hello.
There you are. I'm dying to talk.
Wait, one second, really quick. Hang on. Un café con leche.
Gracias.
And what's going on, girl?
Oh, trouble. Trouble in paradise.
Welcome to Double Trouble, a podcast narrated by identical twins living in organized chaos, trying to figure out what's up and what's down in this world, all while living 2,000 miles apart. Join the combo, my friends. We are here, Lane and Nell, Curtis, Double Trouble.
Welcome back in the house.
We're so excited because we have our third interview guest today, who we've been really gearing up for, ramping up for this. We have Miss Suzanne Ware-Eye on the podcast today. Suzanne, you want to say hi?
Yay, hi.
Suzanne. Good pronunciation, Lane.
You did it. You nailed it.
Suzanne, she is known on Instagram as My Kind of Sweet. She has had a podcast for 2 years now, The Sober Mom Life. And we want to bring her on today because she really, honestly, the moment I met her, she really piqued my interest because she stands for a lot of the things that we want to do on this podcast, which is the idea of bringing topics to the table that are not always to discuss, easy to discuss at a girl's dinner or over coffee. They're provocative. They sometimes can be uncomfortable. And that's why we want to have her on the podcast today.
She speaks to us because she chose to live a bit outside of the box and on her own terms. She did what she thought was best for her, and even if it wasn't that popular choice. And that is incredible.
You guys, look at this. I'm flattered. Thank you. I'm so excited to be here.
No, we're flattered.
Oh, good.
Suzanne, I literally said to my sister, you know, I don't know if it's like an oversell to say that it's revolutionary, but I said, you know, you're a bit of a renegade because you are not only rejecting conventional behavior, but you are opening the door for others to consider it. And that's really a beautiful thing.
Thank you. I know. We call it avant-garde in the sober mom life, in the cafe, and in the group. We're like, you guys, we're avant-garde. It's funny that you say that we talk about things that no one likes to talk about, because the first time you and I like hung out a couple of months ago at our dinner, right? We talked about like everything. And it's like, hi, nice to meet you. Okay, here's my life story. Here's my trauma. You know, like I am so much more comfortable talking about just like the real shit. And so, yeah, when you asked me to be on here, I was like, of course, no brainer. Let's talk about the real stuff.
You also start to realize that at this age, it doesn't happen all the time. Like those moments, yes, and those connections or that kind of authenticity sharing is super special when it happens. It's like a perfect storm. It doesn't happen at every meeting.
The chemistry
we spoke about.
Yeah, we talked about chemistry.
So let's just start really kind of at the beginning. We want to know how this started for you. You know, I know that you started in fashion and that was your influencer.
So I started My Kind of Sweet in 2015. After the birth of my first daughter, I was rocked with postpartum anxiety, OCD, intrusive thoughts. I was just struggling and I needed an outlet for my brain. My brain was trying to trick me in all the different ways that it can in postpartum OCD. And so I was like, okay, I need to like put this to good use and think about other things. I need to reconnect with myself. And so then I started my kind of sweet because I have a fashion background. And so then I was like, okay, this gives me an excuse to dress up. And, you know, I felt so stupid just like standing in my driveway with the tripod and like, you know, trying on outfits and like taking photos of myself. And it felt a little, you know, self-indulgent and all of the things. But I was like, fuck it. Like, this is what I need to do as a lifeline, you know, like I don't care if anybody
drives by and sees you while they're in their, like, their pajamas and their slippers driving.
Again, not taking the pulse in the room. You're like, this is what I feel like I need to do. It might not be the most popular thing, but
yeah, no. And there was for sure like eye rolls and stuff. Like, who does she think she is? And it's like, no, that it's just so not about that. It was about a lifeline. And then when I started to open up about postpartum anxiety and OCD, and I shared my story pretty early in, maybe a year in, after I had gotten on Zoloft, I had gotten help, I had started to tell the truth about how I was struggling. And then it started to become about more than just fashion and style. And it started to be like, what if as moms, we just told the truth and we stopped pretending that we're all okay? Because I think that that just does a disservice to all of everybody and to our kids, because we're not all okay. And, you know, we can look really pretty and polished on the outside, but what if we all just told the truth? And I really started to see the response from moms then. And like the community started to build. And I was like, okay, this feels good. Like it feels better for me than, I mean, I could talk about a sweater, you know, a neutral sweater all day long, but I needed a little bit more. I needed to be like, okay, but also, can we talk about like how hard motherhood is, and that sometimes like you just want to hide from your kids, but that's okay.
Yeah. And like you love them, but you just need a break or to hear your own thoughts, you know, things like that.
Or to have something for yourself. Like, I think that's part of it too, is like the whole motherhood, like leaving a part of yourself behind and be like, well, how can I still access this other part? Like the other part isn't dead.
Totally. And we're not selfless, right? And like, I felt like, wait, I'm still here. Like, I'm still just as here as I've always been.
I have to take care of myself still.
Yeah.
But what was like, how did you know, like, when you say like you started getting this feedback, was that because people were personally reaching out to you or just connecting through the social media?
It was really online on Instagram and on the blog that I would get messages every day like, oh my God, I thought I was the only one. And if there's ever been a drumbeat of like feedback that I get and messages that I get, it's always, I thought it was just me. Like, and that is the danger when we don't talk about the real stuff. Yes. And when we pretend everything's okay.
It's so interesting that you say this, because I always said that even in like the baby making years, it's like, if anybody, like if you experience a miscarriage before, like if you talk about it, you're like, hot diggity dog, everybody's had a miscarriage.
Right.
Like you don't, but if you don't talk about it, you don't know, because it's like everybody's holding like a secret or something, well, that's, you know, selectively private, which is also
okay. But that's again, something that's also uncomfortable. It's bringing up something that makes people uncomfortable. Lane, you and I have talked about this with loss and grief and death. You know, it's like, oh, it's very uncomfortable to talk about sometimes that our father passed away, because then people don't know how to respond to it. So
yeah,
in the same way, it's like, it's hard to say, well, I'm good, but I'm not like doing amazing. I'm having a hard time in my motherhood, in my process right now. I'm not stimulated. I have a lot of anxiety. Like, that's very hard to bring up because people don't know how to respond.
And I think that in motherhood, you know, that's probably when we're first taught just to keep it to yourself, is that first trimester of pregnancy. You don't tell anybody. You don't tell. And that's the hardest part. That's the hardest part of pregnancy, is getting pregnant. And then that first trimester for many women is the hardest, but we're in it alone. Yeah, you're nauseous. You're terrified. If maybe you do have a chemical pregnancy or a miscarriage, and if it's your first one, you don't know what's going on, the beta numbers, all of that stuff. But we're taught like, nope, you don't tell anybody. And so then what do? Then we go inside, and then it's all so much anxiety and fear. And we're just taught not to deal with it. And why don't we share it? Because we might lose it. But what are we going to need if we lose it? So then we're just dealing with that on our own too, of like, okay, well, I guess I'm just grieving this on my own. My husband doesn't understand, right? And so it's, mothers have been, we bear this like cross of just, no, just suck it up. You got to deal with it. And we really saw that in the pandemic when our villages were gone and we bore the brunt of being the teachers and keeping our family safe when we had no idea what was going on.
And being upbeat about it.
Yes, being upbeat and hopeful.
Creating safe spaces for our families.
Yes, and awake, right? I was so tired. I had a three-month-old, a two-and-a-half-year-old, and a five-year-old, right? Like, I just needed to be awake. Women and moms specifically have been taught not to share, not to vent. We can't complain about motherhood. If we do complain about motherhood, there has to be the caveat, like, but I'm so grateful and I love my kids. And it's like, no, we know that. Yeah, like when my husband complains about his job, right? Even though he's the boss, he doesn't feel the need to say, but I'm so grateful that I have this and I know I chose this and it's fine. No, he just gets to fucking vent about his job, right? And about how he spends his day. And no one says like, well, yeah, but you chose this. I mean, you chose it. You chose to work.
Wow. That one's definitely been used on me. I feel like a few times that you chose this.
Right.
Yes, and also that I like hear those words in my sleep.
I know. And it's like,
you wanted a third.
Right. And just the fact I can want it and I can love my third to all ends of the earth. And I can also be very frustrated and say like, this is too hard today. And I think in the pandemic, when, you know, moms felt so much pressure, then, you know, of course, when we've been taught to be quiet and not to talk about it, alcohol really comes in handy not to care. When you care so damn much, but there's nowhere for it to go, it's like, no, just drink this. And then you don't have to care. You don't have to figure out how you feel and what you need. Just drink this.
During the pandemic, that it was a way of like breaking up the day. It'd be like, it's 5 o'clock. It was a way of like deciphering between the part where you're just trying to like survive and I don't want
to
say
suffer.
Something
to look forward to.
Yeah.
Right.
We felt like we needed ways to break up the day. And it wasn't necessarily a matcha, wasn't like maybe doing the cut for a lot of people.
We weren't getting in the cars and driving. So I also kind of enjoyed, I was like, oh, well, I don't have to take the kids to 17 practices. I can actually have a drink. I was sitting and we were relaxing at home. It was kind of like celebratory.
Full disclosure, we're not sober moms. So like we gotta be real careful about this.
Just no, I know here. That. And this is, Lane, I told you, I think during our dinner, you know, and I was like, yeah, you guys drink it. I am never, ever, ever, ever judgmental or shaming moms who drink, ever. And the only thing, like my whole mission is more of an informed consent. And when moms are saying like, I'm so anxious, I'm so tired, I'm so overwhelmed, I look at a mom and I see like, oh my God, like I know what can make this easier for you. Like I know that the alcohol that you've been told and that we've been taught helps. I know that it makes everything so much harder and then it's highly addictive. And I know that you are the target market. Like I know we as moms, their big alcohol spends billions of dollars. That's why every wine label now is pink. Like that's why like there's something called mom water. Like they need us to get addicted.
Something called mom water. That is nuts. Yeah,
I know. They said the quiet part out loud. It's called mom water. Like it's a thing. It's in Target. Like it's bananas. They need us to get addicted. What I always envision when I think about moms drinking and just women overall, because I know who's behind big alcohol, it's men. And so I picture these like four men in like black suits, right? Kind of like Men in Black, you know, where it's just like sunglasses, like just big, powerful men in suits. And like a mom like struggling at the kitchen counter, just like crying. And then them just like pushing a glass of wine and going, shh, and like, just drink this. We don't want to hear. No, we don't want to hear what you need or how you feel. Drink this so you won't care. You're not going to care. And the problem is that then it's not addressed because moms have feelings that matter. And like, but we have been taught like we're selfless, we don't matter. that's where alcohol comes in handy, because it will make you not care. The problem is it makes you not care about everything.
It's like a little bit of a pacifier in these situations, it seems.
Right. And when really moms do have needs that then continually aren't being met, when we're just drinking and reaching for wine and being like, I'm so overwhelmed. Whether that is like, I tell my kids, I'm like, I need a timeout. Me, I do. I need no one to touch me for 10 minutes. I'm going to go in my closet, right? I need whatever. I need a bath. I need to go for a run. I need yoga. I need a dance party. I need to read a book. I need you to just leave me the hell alone for the rest of the night and ask your dad if you need anything. But like, we can't even get there if wine comes in, because then we're just like, no, I need wine. Okay, good. Now I don't care.
I've never been an emotional drinker because for me, I don't like to do anything to soothe myself. I remember when I was younger and going through bad breakups, I'd be like, I wouldn't even drink coffee because I'm like, it's too much of a stimulant for me. It makes me feel falsely happy. I'd be like, I'm just going to drink tea. I'm not going to drink alcohol. I need to feel my emotions. I got to get through like the first 2 weeks. I felt like intuitively like that didn't work for me. But so I'd rather drink when things are good, like have a cocktail to celebrate. I don't like to do it anecdotally to feel better. However, what you described is a real thing. And my sister and I have both witnessed, you know, we're from Wisconsin too. We've witnessed the normalization of it, the blurred lines, you know, I mean, I'm going to say the drunks, you know, I mean, it's just, it's so we know that type of behavior and it's been very normalized and all those things. So what made you get to the point that you were kind of like, okay, you know what, this isn't making me feel better?
It's so interesting because, Lane, I think your relationship with alcohol is rare, right? And it's held up as normal, as kind of a take it or leave it, just like one and done. That's rare. That is not normal. A normal relationship with alcohol would be we take a break, we drink too much, we make rules, we try to moderate, right? We say, okay, I'm only drinking Friday, Saturday, Sunday. I'm only having 2 glasses of wine. I'm drinking water in between. No wine that gives me a headache. It's the sugar. Only beer, right?
But what does that mean? Fully see so, that in our culture. Yes.
Yes. And that is the normal drinker, right? And this is what hopefully my book will be about, is this myth of moderation and the lie of rock bottom. When we're making these moderation rules, and that's what I was doing. And from the outside, I mean, yes, I was a party girl in college and in my 20s, and I loved it. And like, you know,
Yeah, you had your wild moments.
Yes, we were too, by the way. So yeah. don't let me pretend
and
I wasn't
so
that.
It's so fun, yeah. Right? And I felt shame back then, but now looking where I am now, I'm like, no, that was then, right? I'm talking
about
part
of your process too.
Yeah. And as we get into then, I think motherhood has a really big thing to do with it. And then, I'm 43. I stopped when I was 39. And I didn't know any of this when I stopped.
Yeah. You weren't thinking deep into the future. Were you just doing it like in the moment? I'm just doing this right now.
I had no idea that I qualified for sobriety. When I stopped...
Oh, I love that you say that, qualified for sobriety.
Yeah, I didn't think that was for me. I thought that sobriety was for, you know, quote unquote, alcoholics, which I don't even know what that is because maybe addicts, right? And so like, I think of like Meg Ryan in When a Man Loves a Woman. And like, I thought that in order to qualify for a full life without alcohol, or just a life without alcohol, that you had to lose a lot to it. What is it? I don't know. Maybe, you know, it's nebulous. Yeah.
Do you have to get in a car accident? Right. Do you have to lose a husband?
Or do you have to be drinking an alcohol bottle out of a paper bag every morning to breakfast? Like that's what I think sometimes people like want that. That's like, that's the alcoholic, nothing else.
Like what is the sign, right? And so then when I went to a party on actually 4 years ago today, probably know whose party because I'm 4 years sober. Yeah. And I had a 3-month-old baby and I was just, after every baby, I was like trying to like get back into drinking because I would hate the taste and I didn't ever miss it when I was pregnant. But I was like, well, obviously I got to drink alcohol because I'm adult, right? Like this is just what we do.
Going to a party. If you're at a party, you have to drink.
We have to drink alcohol. There was just no question. And so then I was like getting back into it. And it was one of those parties that like the champagne glass was never empty, right? Because it was a fancy party and they're just like, you know, waiters are like flitting in, flitting out. And I don't blame, I loved it.
You lose count very quickly when someone's continuing to refill your glass. You're like,
yes. And I loved it. And actually, Lane, our mutual friend was there too. And I was like, you're not drinking? She's like, I'm breastfeeding. I'm like, I'm breastfeeding too. Who cares? You know, like I was just like, you know, like, no, drink with me. Tell me this is okay. And so, yeah, I ended up blacking out, which I hadn't done in a very long time. And I nursed my baby in the night. I had to have. He was 3 months old, but I don't remember it. And I woke up and I was still in, it was a pajama party. So I was still, I was in the pajamas. I was like, well,
that's confusing.
Okay. Yes.
Very confusing.
And so just, like, and I'm normally like a morning person. I love mornings and I love being the first one up to like greet my family. I love hellos and goodbyes. Like I'm just I'm like, good morning, like with hugs and, you know, and I could hear everybody already downstairs and like my life and everything that I had to, I was just missing out. And I like, it was the amount of shame and regret and, like, how could you? What is wrong with you? All of these like things that I had had those voices before. And I didn't realize it at the time, but I do now, is that that was kind of a constant voice in my head. And it didn't even have to be a blackout drunk. It could just be, you know, I said I was going to have two and I had three. Or I said I was going to have three and then I split the bottle with, and then we ordered another one. But I wasn't, you know, this wasn't every week. I could go months without it. It just wasn't what I thought would qualify for me for sobriety. And so then I was laying on the couch all day long. And so I just said to my husband, I'm done. And as the words were coming out of my mouth, I was like, what are you saying?
You're like,
what are you,
really
don't
committed?
Do it. No,
don't
like,
say it out loud.
Back. Don't say it. And I think he just said like, okay, yeah. I'm just like, you know.
Like, I'll believe that when I see it. Yeah.
Yeah. Like that's going to dissolve as soon as this hangover does. Right. And I just got up and something happened. People call it a click. You know, we call it like building blocks of just like you get just so sick and tired of that. And I did. And I look at it now as like, there was some desperation in there of like, ugh, I never want to feel like this again. There was a whole lot of determination. And then there was just a little bit of hope of like, okay. And I immediately was like, am I going to AA? And I'm like, I don't want to go to AA because I don't want to forever be tied to alcohol if I'm not drinking it. And so, yeah, then I just started this like quest of like, hold on, let me just see. Like, let me just see what alcohol is. I didn't know it was ethanol. I didn't know how damaging it is to every part of us. I didn't know how addictive it is. Like, I didn't know anything. And I also then was like, how did I use it? This was probably a 3-month process of just like really
self-discovery and actually researching.
Telling the truth.
And was that before, like, did you start sharing that right away with people or did you wait until, okay.
So this was January 2020. And so then, you know, the world shut down and, and that was a blessing and a curse.
I know.
I look back now and I'm like, geez, it was
great. I'm a superhero. It's incredible.
But it was great because I didn't have to, like, there was nothing social.
You were going to social events. So there wasn't, you only had to deal with your own voice, not that like peer pressure or the patterns that maybe you had been
used to. I didn't have to deal with the noise and I could create my own little like bubble of like Quitlets and sobriety podcasts. I had one in my ear like all day long and one ear out for the kids to make sure that they were still alive. But I was like, you know what? This is more important than anything right now. Like, let me just figure this out.
Because you know this couldn't save your family life too.
Because did you feel that helped you because you needed to kind of have like the light at the end of the tunnel? Like, this is the big picture of this? Like, this is what's like,
I didn't know anything. Like I wasn't sober curious leading up to the time that I stopped drinking. And so I had never read This Naked Mind. Like I had never read these like Bibles of Quitlet or anything. I didn't know.
So you were educating yourself essentially.
Yes. And then slowly I was also you know, like opening the doors of those times in my 20s and early 30s before getting married, of like times that alcohol did come in and like wreak havoc and what happened. And so then once I started telling the truth about like, oh, anytime like shit hit the fan, it was like alcohol was invited.
That is so fascinating. I was going to ask if your husband, was he relieved? Was he supportive? Was he, is he sober? Like, what does that do?
Yeah, because how is he, does he drink?
He does drink. So we both were partiers before we got married. And then it was like a gradual, you know, like, and then once we had kids, obviously we're not partying, right? And so his drinking had changed overall anyway. He does still drink, but it's not nearly anything. Like, we don't drink at home. He'll have like two beers on the golf course. And I've had to set boundaries about like, this is what I feel comfortable with. And this is what I expect, right? And in a loving way. I asked him the other day, like how he felt. And he wasn't like, and this is also very common when women who are moderating successfully, right? And I say successfully like in quotes, because moderating a highly addictive substance is very hard, and it's hell. It's just hell. You have to try to control something that's very uncontrollable, right? And moderating is hard because it works, right? If it didn't work, it would be very clear. It's the same thing with gambling. Gambling is hard because sometimes you win, right? And so it's that same reward center in your brain and all of this stuff. But all, like most of the women I talked to were drinkers like me, like moderating and just trying to fit alcohol, trying to drink in a more orderly fashion and all of this stuff. But we don't tell anybody about our
inner chatter of how
no one knows.
Or maybe like the drama that what happened, like you said, when the shit hit the fan, that like
totally
maybe you're not telling the storyline behind that, like, oh, like that was a big argument or that was a big embarrassment or whatever it might be.
And I call it in my group, I call it mold in the basement, right? Because we're just like, we're not talking about it. No, we're assuming that everyone else has this dance figured out and like can just moderate just fine. And we are the problem. And so we just assume that we're the only ones struggling because, and a lot of us don't even tell our partners about, like, I would have shame even if I had two glasses of wine. The shame is the same. The shame would be the same for me of like, just not counting on myself, just kind of like, why can't I get a hold of this kind of thing? And so he wasn't like, oh, good. Yeah, you have to quit. He was like, huh. Okay. And so then he would just see, like, we went on a vacation like 3 weeks after I quit. And he was like, I bet she's going to drink. He didn't tell me that then, but that's what he was thinking going in. Right. And I didn't. And I was like, let me just, you know, how many vacations have I invited alcohol to? Okay. So I've done that research. Like, have I ever in my adult life been on vacation without alcohol? Pregnancy doesn't count. And I always say pregnancy doesn't count. And then women are like, why doesn't pregnancy count? And I'm like, pregnancy doesn't count because you don't have the anxiety of like, well, yeah, is this forever? You know, that's what everybody asks.
That's a good point. Not forever. It's like you don't get down the rabbit hole of being like, how's my social life change? How does my,
right.
You know.
It's very socially acceptable and like expected not to drink when you're pregnant. And so your brain doesn't get in the way. And in sobriety, our brain and our what ifs and what abouts and like all of that stuff can really derail us. And so that's why pregnancy doesn't count.
But isn't that's funny. I want to stop on that moment that you said that because it reminds me of a bad breakup.
It totally is. Exactly.
Or the ex-boyfriend, like moving on with someone else. It's like, don't think about that. You can't think about that yet. Like, don't think. Yeah. You have to be.
Well, that's when that practice of the presence comes in. It's like just being in the present. Like, this is today. Like, I know they talk about that, I think, in alcoholism.
Yeah. And like, you know, I always say it's like breaking up with a toxic ex. When you're away from it at first, you can romanticize it, right? And be like, oh, but he's so hot and he's so tall, right? But then you're like, oh, wait, but he's like super narcissistic and made me feel like shit.
So controlling.
Yes. Yeah, and so controlling.
The after effects are terrible. I feel awful after my interactions. Yeah.
That's the problem I had with AA, and I never went. And if AA works for anybody listening, that's amazing. If standing in on your head in the corner works for you, that's amazing, right? Like anything, whatever. But I didn't like the shadow that alcohol casts when you're in AA, and like you're constantly tied to alcohol, like you're forever an alcoholic. You have to. And my sobriety has nothing to do with alcohol. Like that's the best part about it.
What's so cool is that you've tapped into that, because I think it does, like Elaine, you said that at the beginning, it opens up an avenue for people because there isn't just one way. And how we talked about how people don't relate to this one image sometimes of an alcoholic. And just because you're not a quote unquote alcoholic doesn't mean that sobriety isn't an option and in a different, let's say, path.
Totally.
With different tools.
It just comes down to like, can we just all tell the truth? Can we just like be like, hey, you guys, I've really struggled with this and I have felt shame. And like, has anybody else? Because I feel alone in this. And when we feel alone in something, we think something's wrong with us.
Oh, this is
which is shame. It's just shame.
Which is shame.
It's so
exactly.
Paralyzing for people. And well, like, this is detrimental.
Nell and I talked about this with even trying to start this podcast, that we felt like a lot of times our conversations that were so honest were such mental health check-ins that we're like, God, we're so lucky. If we didn't have each other, like we could really feel isolated and alone. I want to ask Nell to tell this story that I thought was really interesting about when she was at Miraval, because it kind of comes down to what you're saying.
Miraval, yeah.
I know. It's like,
this was like the humanizing.
I love Miraval, but their alcohol, I've written a piece about how,
because
we go every year. Yeah. It's insane. Okay.
Well, you'll have to segue onto that, because this is
more about me, because yeah, exactly. We my husband and I had gone there. This was years ago, like the first time that I went. I think it was like 9 years ago, because I remember I was trying to get pregnant with the second child. Anyhow.
In Tucson? Was it that one?
There was a Tucson one, yeah.
Okay.
And we did it's called Not About the Horse. And I still,
yes,
it was such a fun,
I
don't know if you remember this guy.
Yes.
Do you remember the one, he had the big beard, the white
Wyatt
beard? Yes, Wyatt.
Yes.
That's incredible. And I don't think he's there anymore, because since then Googled, he's not.
I mean,
honestly, an angel, like I don't, like
he
this
created
man,
that he's, equine program oh, for them,
goosebumps.
Right? Yes,
He has like, he looks like a cowboy, rustic, huge white beard. He was
tell your story now.
Okay, sorry. Keep me on target.
Get there.
So we did this, and it's Not About the Horse. And of course, I volunteered first, because I think I'm like so amazing with horses. I'm like, sure, fine, I'll do it.
Yeah.
And it was like they're approaching the horse, and like, of course, the horse steps away from me at the beginning, and I'm like, oh. And so he right away starts like the kind of talk therapy process. And I can't remember the exact script or pathway, but all I know is that within like a minute of us talking, you know, openly with maybe there was 20 people in the group, he got out of me that part of my fear somehow was connected to trauma with addiction in my family and alcohol in my family. Somehow I'm like saying that and crying already within the first 2 minutes. I'm like, what, who are you? What have you done to me? And then he looked out, he stopped and he was like, how many people here either have an alcoholic or addict in the family. I think it was specifically alcohol, if I'm correct, an alcoholic in the family or themselves are an alcoholic. Literally every single person raised their hand there, except for my husband. It was the most eye-opening, humanizing moment I've been through, because I just realized how common it was. It was both like inspiring and uninspiring, because it was also like, wow, look at how much, again, the social acceptance of something creates such a gray area for people and creates such a kind of the blurred lines, like difficulty within families.
There's so much like trauma, maybe generational. And we all know that drinking has changed, that the reputation of it has changed through the years. I mean, you watch Mad Men and it's like, all you want to do is smoke a cigarette and get like, I don't know, a neat cocktail. Yeah.
Well, and our mom talks about this, because in her generation, she came from 8 kids, and she says her parents every day at 5:30 would have their martinis. They'd have 2 martinis each, which I think back, I'm like, well, if I had 2 martinis before dinner time, I'd be wasted.
Totally. Yes.
And then, but she was like, they weren't alcoholics, at least in that time, because it was just more like part of their ceremonious part of the day, part essentially.
Their hige at the end of the day.
Yeah, it was part of their routine. And then apparently the kids all did the cleanup. My Nana, she would go off and go on a walk every night after dinner. Like they would eat dinner and then she'd get up and leave and the kids would do the dishes and clean up and everything. So she was off duty apparently. But the point is that yes, there's times where like that was way more socially acceptable. I don't know if like my husband could have two martinis on any day and have me think that's normal or socially acceptable nonetheless.
It's moved on to women, right? Like it's moved on to women and to moms. And it's very, that's not an accident. It's not just because like Etsy started selling, you know, Mama Needs Wine t-shirts. It's because big alcohol's customers kept dying of liver disease and cancer and all these things that alcohol causes. And they needed a new market.
Well, like, this is insane. My mind is like, really blowing right now.
And so, yeah, like, I mean, I've never thought about this. You've researched this is, and whatnot. Like, yeah. This sounds like something you're like working on.
Yes. Like, yes. And if you read Quit Like a Woman by Holly Whitaker, that's in there too. But yeah. And so we think, you know, and this is where I take issue with like the mommy influencers like Molly Sims and like on Instagram, where it's like, isn't this cute that I can, you know, I'm thinking of like Kate Upton, who I ran into at Disney World, P.S.
But stop, I was like, because she's a Florida girl, right?
Yeah. And then, yeah. And I had just called her out. She didn't know who I was, but I had just like reposted her like video about she poured three White Claws. Also, all of these seltzers, you know, it's a women drink. Okay.
Yes,
all of these
exactly.
Like better tastings. Right. And so she pours like three White Claws into a Stanley and is like, this is how I, you know, deal with motherhood. And I'm like,
is she getting paid by White Claw?
I was just going to say, she's sponsored then?
No. So she's not getting paid by White Claw. What she's doing is trying to be relatable and funny. Right. But what she's actually doing is perpetuating this idea that moms need, it's
glamorizing
essential.
It for sure. Yeah, it's glamorizing.
Yes.
It.
And it's
to their survival
for
as a
for motherhood. Like it's not a question. And not only alcohol, but binge drinking alcohol and hiding it. Like if you're drinking alcohol in your Stanley cup because you're going out of the house, right? Like what are we teaching? And I don't think she's doing that. Okay.
No, she's being influenced by the culture and the normalization in general.
That's a good point. Like, you don't think she's actually doing that. She's just trying to be funny, but it's kind of irresponsible.
But her followers are. And her followers are looking and being like, oh, good. I'm not the only one, right? Good. I'm not the only one. This is fine. Nothing to see here.
Yeah. This isn't, I shouldn't feel guilty about this.
Like, right. And this isn't judging her followers. This is judging the top. Right. So this is judging big alcohol and influencers who are tricking their followers into thinking that they need alcohol for motherhood. I was once the perpetrator and the victim because I worked for Ketel One Botanicals when, you know, it came out with the, you know, when Ketel One in 2017 came out with like the pretty bottles and it was like, oh, this is good for you because there's flowers on it and it's botanicals. So obviously, and it was vodka. And so they hired me for a campaign and this is 2017, right? So I was newly into influencing and monetizing and like, it was kind of the wild, wild west. And I didn't know, you know, morals, what are those? And so I was like, sure. Yeah. I'll take your money and make this look pretty. And then I poured it down the drain because I just never was a vodka drinker, but you would never know looking at my Instagram. Like on Saturday afternoon, I'm drinking this new pretty botanical ethanol and still can like have great skin, right? It's dark.
What's so interesting is it's so reminiscent of like the tobacco industry in a way.
That's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
alcohol is coming into its tobacco moment and its cigarette moment. I think we're probably, you know, 10, 15 years away from it, but it's linked to seven cancers. Like when you see like breast cancer, like Susan G. Komen stuff on wine bottles, it's the same exact thing as you would see like, you know, something for lung cancer on cigarettes. Like it's because it's been known to cause seven different kinds of cancer. And we don't know that. We just don't know it.
No, I've never heard that before, to be honest with you.
Right.
I mean, you know that alcohol isn't healthy for you and it's on every doctor form, how often you drink and how many alcoholic beverages per week. Luckily for me, I'm like two, you know, if that, But like, so it's never a concern, but yes, like there's people who drink every single night. And even if it's two glasses of wine while they're cooking, like that's maybe information that they should have, that there are these side effects that could cause seven kinds of cancer that you just said.
And how addictive, like I didn't know it was more addictive than meth. Like I didn't know.
That's fascinating to me because I actually never really thought of alcohol. I thought of like, as the way that I've seen alcohol used is as a way to basically like used in like OCD settings, like to calm like people who are self-medicating.
Which is totally not the case. It spikes anxiety. It messes with all of your neurotransmitters, your serotonin, your dopamine, your GABA. It makes them all off whack, even when you're not drinking it. So even after you're drinking, you know, if you drink Saturday and Sunday, your body is just trying its best. Your body's going to like, because it's a depressant that acts as a stimulant. And so if whether or not you struggle with depression or anxiety, it's going to screw up all of that stuff. And then it's also going to make you, it also like pretty much impossible to find just like that joy and get that dopamine from everyday scenarios.
Yes,
because it's been so messed up. Like the chemicals in your brain.
Your regular activities that would naturally produce dopamine are actually now hindered.
Is this why John Mayer said that sobriety is boring at first?
Totally.
Do you remember when he came out? I love that when he said that.
Yes.
He was like,
it
brings life down and then it kind of slowly starts coming back.
That's actually a very good, not commercial way, but pedestrian way to say something scientific.
Well, and I think that it's so true. And we hear about this from women all the time. Like now that I've stopped drinking, I'm bored. I always say, okay, there are a couple ways to go with that. So there's less chaos, right? There's going to be less drama, less chaos, less fights, and that's good. But also, so what do we want our kids to do, right? So we don't want our kids to always be on screens and occupied. What happens when we let our kids get bored? They figure out what they like to do, right? And they're like,
creativity.
Oh, okay. Bursts. They get creative. And they're like, oh, I really like this. And they'll make like all of these. Like, I'm like, oh my God, look, they're like in the sea on these blankets and their imaginations go wild, right? The same happens with us. But since most of us have been drinking since 16, 17, 18, we don't know what we like. If alcohol has just constantly been at like, you know, every weekend, every vacation, every concert, every event, every party, every... Like we generally then don't know, am I an introvert? Am I an extrovert? What makes me feel good? Like, do I have social anxiety? What makes me happy? What makes me fulfilled? All of these things, like we just don't know. And so we look at that, like we always talk about that in the Sober Mom Life Cafe as something that's so exciting. Like it's so exciting, changes your life. I started the podcast almost 2 years ago, and I get to talk to all these cool people and influencers and authors, and it's amazing. And I also started a Facebook page, like kind of to support the podcast. And that grew so quickly that I was like, okay, I need something. Like, we're at like 55,000 women.
Why do you think the Facebook page grew so quickly? What is that about?
I think women just want a place that isn't AA that they can talk about how moderation sucks and like find freedom in sobriety.
I think age related. I wonder if there's also like with Facebook, that it kind of is like the people in their 40s. And yeah, exactly. Yeah. 40 plus. Yeah.
Well, and also Instagram is going crazy too with all of like Gen Z and millennials, I think have this. Baby boomers are the ones who are drinking. Their drinking is on the rise. Everybody else's drinking is declining. So it's definitely the older people who are drinking more. But okay. Anyway, and so then since Facebook then became like its own little town or city, that I was like, I need a place where just we can meet. So we have meetings 6 days a week, peer support meetings that we just talk about this. And we're like, you guys,
and are you there every meeting?
I was, but now that it's grown, we have like 400 and some women. It's $25 a month, but we have meetings. My mom hosts them. She's a therapist.
Audrey is a girl who's helped me so much. We have Jen. Like, we just have these people leading meetings. We have book club. We have a retreat coming up. And so it's all just like women just like this being like, okay, can we just talk about, you know, alcohol and how it's affected us and our shame around it and how to deal with triggers and cravings and friendships and husbands.
So you're seeing the need, and every time you see it, you kind of like keep creating the next space and the next, like, even when you say retreat, I'm like, you're ahead of it. Like, you're like, you know what? This would be special.
Yeah. I just am creating what I needed in January 2020.
Do you find that the people in these forums, are they all sober, or a lot of them are experimenting with the idea, or it's kind of a mix? Like, do you have to be sober to be part of it?
No. And it was really important to me to include sober, curious women, because right now they don't have a place to go. It's just you're on your own, figure it out, drink like everybody else in an orderly fashion or else, right? And I didn't want that. That's what I wanted for someone to be like, okay, sobriety, what is this about? Like, I don't love my relationship with alcohol, but I'm terrified of giving it up. And what would that mean? And so then we have women who are still drinking. And then I say, like, the most important thing is just to show up and tell the truth. That's it. And it's no judgment. Like, you're never going to say something in those meetings and people will be like, oh my God, I can't believe you did
you're
that.
Out.
We're
going to
say, like, yep. Yes, we're with you.
I love that. I love that. Because yeah. I've listened to some of your podcasts now, and I told you this when I saw you. Like, I'm always like, wow, the people are so honest. And I really do appreciate it, because I think these stories, it has to be cleansing to tell, to
yes.
get it off of your chest and to admit mistakes yes. that you made that were honestly like that you would never have done sober.
Yeah, it has to be a safe place to tell it, right? And so, like, we have some Sunday meetings, topic meetings, and it's just on shame. And at the retreat, we're doing a shame seance. And it's like, tell me, like, what are you most shameful of? Like, speak it, say it, because as you say it, it's going to lose its power. It's that mold in the basement, right? If we don't say it, if we don't look at it, it's going to grow. It's just going to, and it's like, no, you're not alone. You're not alone in the mistakes you've made. That's also not you. That's alcohol.
We've talked about that a lot in my sister and I and our family, even the idea that it's like, with people who have an addiction to something, it's the addiction is separate from the person. And I think, you know, when someone's trying to defend their addiction or their vice,
because anyone who's addicted to it, they will protect it over anything else.
And they'll kind of weaponize that. And it's like this is, they relate it to themselves. And my sister and I have always had to deal with that idea of like, this isn't you. You are you. We love you. We don't love the alcohol.
You don't even have to be addicted to feel that shame. Like, that shame isn't you, right? And like, that shame, even if you're not addicted to alcohol, like, for you to examine your relationship with it and just be have your eyes open, right? Like, don't wait to become addicted.
When this is one of the questions we wanted to ask you is sobriety for everyone, or is it something where people can, you already talked about moderation. Is it something that people can play with and be like, you know what, I'm just going to take 6 months off, or I'm going to take 3 months off, or I don't know, a month off. Is that kind of a dangerous create like a binge and purge cycle?
Everyone has their own journey as far as their relationship with alcohol. Yes, sobriety is for everyone. Yes, everyone qualifies for a full life without alcohol. It would be the same. And I do this as a mental exercise all the time. Like, if someone said, is a life without cigarettes for everyone? I would say, yes, everyone can benefit from a life without cigarettes, right? And so, yes, everyone can qualifies for sobriety. Everyone can have a full life without alcohol. How you get there and whether or not you want it is a different story. I think any break that you give your body from alcohol and your brain from alcohol, your mental health from alcohol is amazing and is a win. So if that's 3 months, if that's 6 months, I also urge women to zoom out. And so it's not this pass-fail thing. We never say we're on day one, because you're bringing all of that with you. And so if you set out to do like 100 days without alcohol and you end up drinking on day 38, You had 37 days without alcohol. That's amazing. And what did you learn in there? And what did you learn when it came back in? And how do you feel? And now your eyes are opening a little bit every time. And, you know, if you zoom out, you're probably getting to a place where you're like, oh, you know what? I see this now. I see how alcohol affects me. I see that life is definitely not over without alcohol. And so it's just, it's not this black and white pass fail, you, not you, you know, it's yes, sobriety for everybody.
Yeah, no, that's it's really good. It is good to know. But I mean, because I think like, again, a lot of our listeners are not, you know, we're not a sober podcast. So it's kind of like we said before we did this, like, yeah, we don't want to alienate anyone. I mean, we're not sober, you know, but we do believe in like checking in and just in life period and being conscious of decisions. And that's why we try to bring topics to the table that are demanding that.
We make choices that are unsafe, unhealthy every day, but it's just about talking about it. Around alcohol, we've been taught just not to talk about it. Like, don't talk about your relationship with alcohol. Don't talk about any shame you feel. Don't talk about it. And so I'm just saying, well, no, let's talk about it. And let's talk about it honestly so that we don't feel alone.
I love it. How do you, because I talk about this too. We know that like in our households, we demonstrating behavior of how we want our kids. It's like, yeah, you can't tell your kids not to yell if you're constantly yelling.
Right.
It's like,
right.
It's just, ugh, yeah. It's like, oh, I guess
like
I should stop yelling.
Like what?
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
So
yes.
Like, what do you even think that far ahead when you think about your kids? And like, we know at some point they're going to be exposed to partying and like, that's going to be happening. Do you think about how you're going to cross that bridge or do you have ideas?
Yeah, for sure. The best book about this is The Addiction Inoculation by Jessica Leahy. And she was on my podcast. And yes, for sure. I grew up a Gen X kid, just taught this is your brain on drugs. No one said anything about alcohol to me. And the thing that I do with my kids and with all of them, they're 4, 6, and 9, I just tell the truth. Like, we don't have to villainize alcohol. We just have to tell the truth about it. What is it? What does it do to your brain? Your brain, you know, the sooner you begin drinking alcohol, the more likely it is that you will become addicted. That's just the science of it. And your brain isn't done developing until you're 25. It can really hinder brain development. And so we just tell the truth.
I'm sure it increases like the chances of depression or anxiety
totally.
And all those things too.
And I think more what I do day to day, and this is probably the biggest misconception about me, is that I'm just going around in my daily life, like preaching sobriety and talking about the dangers of alcohol, which I'm not. Like, I don't talk about it with my friends. Like, I just don't. That's my job. And then, I'm not like this proselytizer on the corner being like, no, alcohol. Yeah, like teetotaler, yay. It's not that. And so the way that my kids see, I think the best thing that I've taught them through my sobriety is recognizing how I feel and then saying what I need. And I see them doing that. And when I can see them doing that, I'm like, okay. When I hear my six-year-old being like, I am so frustrated or I need attention and I'm feeling so sad, I need a hug. Like that to me, I'm like, holy shit, great. Okay. They hear a mom who just is knows how she feels and then says what she needs. And that I think is the biggest gift, for me of sobriety for sure.
Okay, well, and then I do want to kind of talk about you keep mentioning the book deal. So I kind of want to say like, well, what does the future hold for you, Miss Suzanne? What does the future hold?
When are we going to go buy your book? Tell me.
I don't know. If I have learned anything in the last like 6 months is that the book publishing world is so slow and things take so long. I have a couple calls next week with editors who are very interested and we'll.
So you're pitching a book basically is what you're doing.
Yeah, I have an agent. I have a book agent. We're pitching it and they're interested. And so let's just keep everything crossed. And then I got to write the thing.
I'm so impressed by you with the content. Like to me, it seems like you have so much content to pull from. Like you've really done your work, your homework, your research.
Preparation meets opportunity.
There you go. That's what's happening.
Oprah, that's by Oprah. I can't steal that one. Yeah.
Suzanne, but what are your goals around being a voice for sober moms or being that person that's like holding the space, cultivating that space for quote unquote sober moms? Like, what are some of your long-term goals with that?
I know. I don't know. I always say I just build the plane as I fly it. Like, I kind of just jump. And then as long as I can create a space where women can talk about their shame and not feel judged, and that we can just support moms in ways that are healthy and that they need, I feel like that's all I want to do. And so wherever that leads, and as long as I continue to do that, I'll be happy. This is just like my life's goal.
I love that. And you know what? I just listened to that Michelle Obama interview with Jay Shetty. They talked about, both of them talked about this idea, as you get older, being open and receptive. And instead of being like, you know, as you get older, if people become more closed off, more judgmental, all these like emotional caveats that can kind of just make you more closed off in life. And it doesn't do anything good for you. It doesn't assist you in the process of like, of aging happily. And I love that, this idea of being open and receptive. And yes, and so that kind of reminds me of what you're doing.
The space that you're creating also, to me, seems so inclusive. It seems that it would be helpful for not even people who are considering stopping drinking. It seems like it's just this very diverse space for healing.
Yes.
In general. And for, like you said, sharing.
Yes. I think that moms specifically, and just women, need a space that their voice can be heard, and that they can say like, no, my feelings matter and they're not being met and they deserve to be met. Like, I need something, and it's okay. And it's necessary for moms to need something and for us to be able to say what we need and get it.
Beautiful.
Love it. Thank you for sharing.
Well,
thank you.
I think this was like a really great, I don't know if there's anything else now that you want to say.
We had one last question that was that, and I feel like you've touched on all of this, but it was, how has becoming sober changed your life mostly? And like, you can say that in a big long sentence. You can say it in a few words.
You guys know I never just have a few words, but
you can make it a really long run on sentence if you'd like.
Okay. I mean, man, it's changed everything. I mean, it's from the outside, it's changed everything. But I think that the most important is from the inside. I can trust myself. And as you know, I was a little girl who didn't have anybody to trust, and I didn't learn how to do that. I didn't learn that people were trustworthy and that I could trust myself. And I, in my sobriety, have taught myself that not only can I trust myself, but that I'm worth it and I deserve it. And that, I think, has been, it's just been the gift of a lifetime. Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. That's like, wow. I feel like we could ask you so many more questions on that one. Like,
I know.
That's Thank beautiful. You. It's really beautiful. I want to tell our listeners, go follow Suzanne at My Kind of Sweet on Instagram and have a listen to her podcast. We'll make sure we link everything when we drop this.
Thank you. And if you see me walking around our town, I promise you I'm not judging your drinking. That's a whole other
good.
That's a whole other thing.
Yeah, yes. I'm sure that's
I'm not judgmental of you or your drinking. I just want the best for moms. That's it.
You know what, Suzanne, I think, and that's a really good point, because that's what we say, even when we did a tech talk one, and we did like, you know, it's important that we're like, the baseline has to be non-judgment. The baseline has to be that we're trying to work together.
You start from there, and then it's the sharing of ideas, because it's, again, getting out of the closet, not feeling alone in these situations.
Yes, exactly.
And thank you so much for like, just for your space, period, whether or not, like, I just think you're doing such an important service to so many people, and yourself first, but then opening the door for people is just such a beautiful offering.
Thank you, ladies. I loved this.
Thank you so much. I feel like I want to just hang out.
Oh my God. I know. Thank you.
Oh my God.
Thank you for being here.
All right.
Thanks.
Oh, hey, it's Erin.
And I'm Michaela, and we're the hosts of the Two Sober Girls podcast, and we are on a mission to spill the wild truth about sobriety.
Forget the rosé all day cliche. Sobriety is flipping amazing.
Absolutely. It's not just about quitting the drink. It's a gift you give yourself and your loved ones.
So what are you waiting for? Break up with that old toxic relationship with alcohol and let us show you the possibilities.
And here's the thing. Everything your precious heart desires becomes way easier without the influence of alcohol.
We're not just two sober girls. We're also wellness coaches. We're here to show you how to optimize health, lifestyle, and beauty, feel sexy and alive as F.
So stay tuned because we're rolling out new episodes every Monday wherever you get your podcasts. And trust us, they have your name written all over them. We can't wait to share the magic of sobriety and wellness with you. Subscribe to Two Sober Girls Podcast today and come follow us on Instagram for behind the scenes action and send us a DM. We can't wait to meet you.